listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up. Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on this Wednesday, June the 24th. I am your host, Mike. Joining me, as always, is Tom Ernesty from right here at DolphinsTalk.com. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I've missed every single one of you listeners out there. I miss football. I'm just glad that we're talking about it again as we inch closer to a potential start of training camp.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm hoping for the best. I think we'll see NFL football. If you're a fan of college football, I wouldn't make any plans. Let's just leave it at that, though, because there's so much uncertainty. Let's not even get into that debate tonight. So first thing we got to talk about off the bat is the passing of Jim Kick, Miami Dolphins legend, over the weekend, 73 years old, passed away. You know, one of the all-time great Miami Dolphins. Obviously, when you think of those teams in the early 70s, a few names always pop to the front of your mind. You always think of Zonka. And when you say Zonka, what's the next word out of your mind? Zonka and Kick. So you always think of Jim Kick, 73 years old, died of dementia, which it's an awful disease. My mother passed away from that last November, so I know exactly what the family is sort of what they're going through at this time. It's painful to watch, and nobody should have to lose a family member that way. Sort of speaking from firsthand experience, and I spoke to his son Brandon actually on Saturday when the news broke, because him and me, we chat often. Well, not, I shouldn't say often, but we chat every now and then, and usually on Sundays when Miami is playing, you know, we'll chat, you know, in the game even sometimes, because, you know, he's a son of Jim Kick, but he's also a big fan of the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, I know him a little, so I just wanted to sort of pass along our condolences to them. I know that he has three children. Jim, he has two sons, which are Austin and Brandon, as well as his youngest daughter named Allie. And just want to, you know, pass along our thoughts and prayers, because Jim Kick is a legend. He really is a legend. And, you know, with the passing of Shula this offseason and now Jim Kick, you know, I hope that – I mean, look, they will handle this in a first-class manner. They always do. I would expect, just a guess, that the Miami Dolphins will wear a patch on the uniforms for Shula, and they'll probably put some sort of a helmet decal on the helmet there for Jim Kick. That just seems like the most sense. What do you think, Tom?
I think it makes sense. You know, you lose two legends, obviously the biggest legend of Don Shula, and, of course, Jim Kick, who played a vital role in the Dolphins championship seasons. And when you really look at, you know, the body of work, Kick being in that platoon with Larry Zonka and then, you know, with himself and then Mercury Morris – at that time, the Dolphins weren't really a strong football team. Not many teams were. But when you have three very strong running backs running the football, it was very hard to contain. And in those Super Bowl years, Kick started two games in the 72 playoffs in that perfect season. In the playoffs, had 100 yards total rushing, four touchdowns. But think about it. 34 rushing attempts in that postseason. When you add in Zonka and Morris, the Dolphins were just battering teams with those running backs. And Jim Kick obviously was a big part of that. He was a very versatile running back also. He caught 233 passes in the course of his career, an average 10 yards per reception. He had four receiving touchdowns, 29 rushing touchdowns. Overall, a very good career. And obviously, as you mentioned, a legend in the Miami Dolphins world, especially on that 72 team. He will be missed. I'm glad he's not suffering anymore from the dementia. As you mentioned, you went through it personally. it's not something great to be a part of from a family member perspective. When a family member starts going through dementia, it is very difficult. And, you know, we wish him and his family, obviously, all the best going forward. Speaking of his son, as well as the family members, and hope, you know, hopefully they can attend a ceremony or something that the Dolphins most likely will have for Kick here at some point in the 2020 season.
Yeah, and for those of you who want to hear a bunch of great Jim Kick stories, we did a podcast with his son last February. I interviewed Brandon on the podcast. Since I was talking to him all the time, I go, you got to come on the podcast and tell people some of these stories because they're great stories. So I reposted the link to that on social media, and it's in the article on the main page of the site as well. So if you want to listen and sort of reminisce about some great Jim Kick stories, you get it firsthand straight from his son. So check that out for those of you who didn't get the chance to listen to that back in 2019 when he was on the podcast. Next, I also want to wish a speedy recovery to Alex. And for those of you who don't know, we have, you know, a bunch of podcasts on our site and our network. And for the Two Old Dolphins podcast, one of the co-hosts is Alex, who had a heart attack last week, and he went through successful surgery over the weekend. And, you know, he's on the mend and he's getting better. So I just want to wish a speedy recovery to Alex. We're thinking about you. We want to hear you back on the podcast soon talking about the Fins. And just want to send you our best thoughts.
Absolutely. Get well, Alex.
Yep. Okay. Let's get to some Miami Dolphins news, and then we're going to jump right into the mailbag. We got a bunch of mailbag questions, and we got some interesting ones, to say the least. So first bit of news I want to talk about, though, is there was an article in the Miami Herald put out by Barry Jackson. It's talking about, you know, pretty much the rehab of Tua Tagovailoa and everything he's sort of gone through since being drafted by the Dolphins. I'm not going to go through the whole article. It's on the Miami Herald website. Check it out. It dropped on Monday afternoon. A lot of good information there, and he spoke to the agent of Tua as well. But the key part, I think, that comes out of the whole article, which I sort of, which I sort of want to hone in on, is that when it came to, you know, where is he physically right now in late June? Where is he physically right now? It talks about his rehab in Alabama. It talks about, you know, the past 8 or 9 days he's been in Miami at the facility rehabbing there. And it talks about, you know, where is he right now? And according to his agent and some others, you know, if there was a game to be played next week, he could play. So this whole notion that, you know, we got to rest up, we got to rest him up to, you know, you can't rush him out there. He needs time to heal. To me, I've said it right after the draft. He went into that draft. Everyone said he's healthy. We're now in late June. He said more time to rehab, more time to get more strength, to work on the strength, to work on the conditioning. And we're hearing the same thing in late June. If he had to play right now, he could play. Now, either A, everyone's lying through their teeth, which I don't think they are, because these people have no reason to lie. He's already been drafted. He already signed a contract. The money thinks this is all done. There's no reason to lie. So I don't think anyone here is lying. So with that said, I have to take these people at their word that he's healthy and ready to go. And if he's healthy and ready to go, I've said this since day one, I will continue to say it, he starts week one against the Patriots, period, end of story. It's not even up for debate. Because as much as Ryan Fitzpatrick played, you know, well at times last year, especially at the end of the year, when it comes down to it, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is a stopgap player. We didn't just invest a number five pick in the draft in a quarterback to have him sit on the bench. Okay, he's the future, and that's now. Okay, Ryan Fitzpatrick playing for 6-7 games are just 6 or 7 games wasted, where this kid could be getting, you know, all the reps in practice and be getting significant learning experience on the field. So to me, if he's healthy, which again, from all reports, he's healthy and ready to go now. Not we'll be ready to go in the future. He's healthy and ready to go now. He starts week one, and that's it. That's the end of it. Because, you know, the whole thing with Fitzpatrick is, you know, he's a stopgap player. And, you know, he's not the future, and he's just keeping the seat warm. Tom, your thoughts?
I agree with you. I think if he is healthy, And all reports are that he is perfectly fine. You know, I've seen the videos of him working out during the rehab. His footwork looks great. It doesn't look like he's favoring any part of his body, the ankles, the hip, shoulder, everything. He looks fine for Tua right now. I think with everything that's happened, you know, the stars are aligned for the Dolphins. And I kind of stealing a little thunder from Colin Coward. Everything's aligned for the Dolphins and Tua right now. Tua goes to a better organization than being picked first by the Cincinnati Bengals. He's had an entire offseason where there actually were no camps. So nobody was able to see Tua. Not even teammates were able to see Tua. So now when everybody gets the chance to see Tua, when camps open up, they may be like, damn, this kid looks good. So it's going to be very hard for Brian Flores to do what he did last year with Ryan Fitzpatrick versus Josh Rosen, where Rosen outplayed Fitzpatrick in the preseason. Whatever, if they play any preseason games and Tua outplays Fitzpatrick, there is no, well, Ryan Fitzpatrick's our starter. Uh-uh. That's not happening. Tua's going to be the guy from day one. And I don't care about what people are going to say about the offensive line and everything else. That's what practice is for.
Yeah, I don't care about the preseason games. I don't care about the preseason games either. He can play like crap in those preseason games. He's still the starter. When you take a guy number 5 overall, he plays. Period. End of story. He can play like crap in the preseason. He still should be the starter because he's the future.
Not only, you know, is he the future, but the ceiling is so high with this kid. I expect him to start. You know, I'm contemplating, you know, going back and forth between, well, maybe Fitzpatrick will play, you know, and you and I have talked about it on the show, Mike. Maybe Fitzpatrick plays up until they get home from playing 4 out of the first 6 games on the road, and then they have, 6 out of the next 8 games at home? Yeah. I mean, that still could be on the table, but if he is 100% ready to go and there's no restrictions with Tua Tagovailoa, you play him week 1 at New England and let him just destroy the Patriots defense if possible.
You know? Yeah, and having him on the bench, you know, for those first however many games on the road, you know, what is it you said, for the first 6 on the road or some, you know, whatever, that's just being scared. If you're a high-quality quarterback, you can play home or away, and you can't play scared. You put the kid out there. Look, any rookie quarterback is going to take their lumps in year one. So you might as well just get them out of the way now. This 2020 season is going to be, you know, who the heck knows? It's going to be a roller coaster. Some teams might have fans in the stadium. Some teams might have no fans in the stadium.
They might not even start on time.
They might not even start on time. You might not have, you know, no preseason games, 1 preseason game, 4 preseason games. It's going to be a disaster. If there's any year to just sort of, you know, throw caution to the wind, this is the year. Flores ain't going to get fired unless he, like, loses them all, which I doubt they'll do that. You know, he ain't getting fired. He's playing with a little bit of house money. And, you know, throw the kid out there if he's healthy, and let's see what he's got. If you're afraid he will be hurt, then we made the wrong pick already, and this ain't going to work out, folks. You can't play scared. They drafted the kid. He's supposedly healthy. You play him. That's it. This whole, you know, yes, Ryan Fitzpatrick beat the Patriots week 17 last year, had a few, you know, great moments in 2019. Who cares? That's last year. And now it's time to sort of turn the page on that chapter and look towards the future. And Ryan Fitzpatrick ain't the future, okay? And 2020 is going to be, for lack of a better word, a shit show in this league. And it's not their fault. They're going to try their best to make it as normal as possible. This is something out of their control. So I'm not blaming the NFL. I'm not blaming the Dolphins. I'm not blaming anybody. That's just the world we're living in. So with that sort of hanging over the entire league, this is a year to just throw the kid out there and, you know, take the rookie growing pains now. Because come 2021, that's when you want to be ready to go. When things are, quote unquote, back to normal, hopefully.
I agree. We'll see. Again, a lot of things have to happen, but by Barry Jackson's account of what he's hearing and how things are going for Tua, I would be shocked that he is not full 100% practicing when the teams get on the field, hopefully sometime in July. Obviously, things are getting a little crazier again So we don't know what's going to be happening here in the near future. But at the end of the day, the Dolphins understand what they have with the quarterback position. They know Ryan Fitz. They know who Fitz is. And there's no better person and potentially no better offensive coordinator to install this RPO system, this spread-style offense that is coming here from Chan Gailey that Ryan Fitzpatrick has run for many years with Chan Gailey to now give that to Tua and let Tua put his spin on it, so to speak, and let him run it. And he did that with perfection down in Alabama, as we know. I think we're going to see a lot of fireworks from the Dolphins if Tua is ready to go week one against New England Patriots.
Yep. All right, let's jump into the mailbag. For the first question was the one that I sort of didn't read last weekend. Let's not go for an hour on this time because we could, but let's try to answer this with the Cliff Notes version. So we'll talk about it a little, but we won't do the hour that we probably could do on this. So from Travis in Allentown, Pennsylvania, I was born after Marino retired, and while I understand he is a great quarterback, please explain to me how great he was. Tom, I'll let you start on this.
Where do we begin? I think, you know, Travis, I think where you really want to start is pull up highlights from Dan Marino's 1984 season. The kid was Dan Marino at the time, first full season at the helm for the Dolphins, and he lit it up. Nobody has ever seen anything like this in the NFL at that time, where Dan Marino goes out there, throws 48 touchdown passes. I forgot how many yards he threw that season. I think it was over 4,500 or something like that. Something ridiculous, okay? We can go to 1985. The Chicago Bears come in undefeated to Miami on Monday Night Football, and Dan Marino threw the ball down their throat, so to speak, and lit up the Bears, which was their only loss on the season. And Dan Marino changed the quarterback position for the long term in the NFL. Don Shula, as we know with history in the 70s, they ran the football. Ran. That was the Dolphins' philosophy. They're going to ground and pound and play defense. Shula gets his hands on this young kid from Pittsburgh. He completely adjusts his system and the way that they ran things to work with his pedigree was. And Marino wanted to throw the football. And if you want to really get an idea, look at Dan Marino when they call run plays. As he's hearing it through his headset, you can see the smirk on his face. Like, are you kidding me? And most of the time, he would audible out. Marino was the original OG gunslinger in the NFL.
Yeah,
and he changed the game forever from the quarterback position. And when you look further down the road from Marino in his prime, now you got guys like Brett Favre, you got guys like Peyton Manning. You got guys like Ben Roethlisberger. You have players that come into the league and immediately light it up, but no one did it before. And I don't know of many people, maybe outside of Patrick Mahomes this year, did it better than Dan Marino when it comes to lighting up the scoreboard.
Yeah, Pat Mahomes is the closest thing that to Marino I've seen since him, because how
from arm talent perspective.
Well, sure. from that, and from also how Pat Mahomes sort of jumped on the scene, yeah, and just exploded numbers. In this day and age, all the quarterbacks put up huge numbers, but Pat Mahomes went past even them. So that sort of reminds me a lot of Dan. And the thing with Dan is there's two things I want to mention. Number one, when you have some, which I think this is what someone like Travis is like really sort of asking for here with this question. When you have a quarterback of that level, with that much talent, who's that good and has such a control over the game, you're never out of the game. There were many a games with the Miami Dolphins. They'd be down after the first quarter, 21-0. They'd be down 17-3. And you'd be like, we're in this. We got this. It's not an issue. And, through the rest of the game, he would just, you know, put the team on his back and lead him to a win. So you're never out of the game. It didn't matter what the score was. You're never really out of the game, you know. So that, and that's the one thing. As a fan of the Dolphins, I'm in my early 40s. I miss that part of it because, you know, look, a lot of quarterbacks can't do that, so it's not a knock on them. But when you're watching guys, excuse me, can't stop coughing today. But when you're watching guys, you know, for the Dolphins like a Dante Culpepper or Ryan Tannehill, if they get down 21-0, game's over. You ain't coming back. Those guys aren't putting the team on their back, and you're not coming back. When you had someone like Marino, you're you know, it was never over.
Nope.
So that, yeah. And plus, I don't care who they're playing, where, or what the conditions were. If the game was tied late or you're down by a score late and he had the ball, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win the game. Okay. And he was going to score. So that's something else that a fan of the Dolphins we haven't had in a long, long time. The other thing is when you look at the stats in that time he played, it isn't like now. I know fans always say it's not the same. All the rules have been changed, but it's so true. 84, second year in the league, 5,084 yards and 48 touchdowns. That is, and will go down because of the rule changes, as the single greatest season any quarterback's ever had in the history of the sport, and that'll never change unless they sort of revert back to the old rules. It just won't ever. That's the single greatest season ever, and that was his second season. 85, 4,100 yards and 30 touchdowns. 86, 4,700 yards, almost another 5,000-yard season, which in that era was unthinkable. 44 touchdowns. 87 was a strike-shortened year, so he only played in 12 games. Even in the 12 games, he threw for 3,200 yards, and which is, once again, those guys, it was a strike-shortened year. They weren't together that much. It was sort of like a 2020 season, a bunch of mishmash mess. He still put up huge numbers. 88, bounced right back, 4,400 yards. You fast forward. He gets hurt in 93 with a terrible injury to the Achilles. Comes back in 94, 4,400 yards and 30 touchdowns. It was just, you know, you see the numbers, and I think sometimes you just take them for granted, which, you know, I think the fans who were alive, like you, like me, who lived through this, you know, sometimes we don't really appreciate as much what we actually saw week to week because it was unbelievable. So I always cringe when I hear fans say, we got to find our next Marino. You're not going to find a next Marino.
Never.
Just find a good starting quarterback. You'll never find a next. That's like if Yankee fans say, we got to find the next Ruth. You're never going to find another Babe Ruth. He's Babe Ruth. You're never going to find. You might find some guys who are good. You'll never find another Babe Ruth. You never find another Marino. So when fans say that, or when our owner in the past has said that, I always cringe because it makes him look stupid. Because you're never going to find another Marino. He's a one-in-a-lifetime player. And just find a very good quarterback. And don't hold every quarterback we've had since up to the standard of Marino, because it's not fair to them, and they're always going to let you down. And you'll never have success that way. So once, as fans, media types, our owner stops that, you might have a little success. So don't compare any quarterback to Marino, but long story short, you were never out of a game, and he was just trend-setting in a million ways. And plus, there was no dink and dunk passes or sideways or, you know, he ain't going to throw a freaking bubble screen. That crap didn't fly. He was attacking the field, throwing downfield, and he earned every one of his yards, period. Yep. I know the game has changed, and I don't want to knock younger guys now because the game has changed. They all do it now a whole different way, but he didn't.
No, he played in an era where when the quarterback got hit, the flag stayed in the ref's pocket. For the most part, unless it was absolutely egregious. But Dan Marino, every game, his jersey was dirtied up because he was getting hit. And nowadays, you could sneeze on a quarterback and you'll get a 15-yard penalty for it. So the era of football, and that's the other thing too, Mike, you mentioned, you know, don't compare Marino or don't try to find the next Marino. You can't compare a Dan Marino in 1980 to a Drew Brees right now. It's no. two completely different eras of football that these guys played in. So you really cannot compare the players. Yeah, you can compare the stats because it's a number, but the eras of football are completely different. It's, you know, there's so much advantage for quarterbacks and wide receivers in today's game versus what it was back in 1984, 1985, and so on.
Yeah, it's night and day. He was on a sideline looking at like an iPad or like a Microsoft Surface, pointing things. He didn't have that stuff. He just picked up the phone, talked to the guy in the box, and maybe he got a picture handed to him of what the defense was doing. It's night and day how the game has changed. And, you know, not saying it's worse or better. It's just a fact. It's night and day. So, hope that sort of answers that question. Like I said, we could go on for hours on that one, but that sort of gives you the gist of it, just how trendsetting he was and stuff like that. Next question's from Brian Litwin. He doesn't say where he's from, so he's from parts unknown. I noticed on your show and elsewhere how upset fans get when we did not get a certain position in the draft, i.e. running back J.K. Dobbins, or move up to take one of the top offensive linemen, as well as some other spots in the draft. So is it just that the coaches and GMs think best player available and not fans? And if so, who's right? Thanks. Love the show. Okay. I'll jump on this one first. Look, you can't take stuff you read on social media that seriously when it comes to this stuff. General managers and head coaches have more knowledge than anybody you'll find on Twitter, okay? Or anyone you'll find on Facebook. And I know there's a lot of fans, but the key word is here is fans, who invest a lot of time into the draft. They watch a lot of, you know, tape, quote unquote, but they don't have a trained eye, okay? Now, you can watch a lot of tape and you can read up on a lot of stuff and you can work at this, put in many years and many hours of work. But at the end of the day, you're sitting at a home or sitting in an apartment and you're just as a hobby. Maybe you get paid a few bucks, but it's not your job, not your life. Even if it is your job, not your life, unless you've worked for an NFL team, you're pretty much, you have an untrained eye. So, look, and I admit I'm there too, but I never pass myself off as one of these guys who's like, quote unquote, draft expert. So in the Miami Dolphins on night two of the draft, don't take a running back. And Tom Earnesy, who's been up for 8 hours, no, who's been up since like, you know, 5 a.m., is ready to flip out. That's just a fan venting, and yep, we all do it. But the coaches and the general managers who've been in the sport of football longer than most of us have been alive, they know what they're doing. So, you know, if you got to say who's right, we're going to, you know, you got to side with them. That's not saying they're perfect. That's not saying they don't make their mistakes. But you can't put a lot into fans, even the ones who might be more educated than other fans or might, you know, put out stuff. You can't take that the same way a general manager who's grown up in the business and has, you know, spent his entire life in the business, who knows more than any fan. So, long story short, you know, the trust the general managers and stuff, and, you know, don't take stuff fans say as gospel. Even if the fans got a website, even if it's our website, or any website like ours, or any draft website, or blog, or podcast, or video, YouTube channel, look at the source. Consider the source. I'm not saying that they're wrong, or those people don't know what they're talking about, but, you know, you got to... You know, a NFL general manager, even the worst one, you know, still knows a lot about football that the average Joe doesn't.
Yeah, so I just had flashbacks to the second night of the draft, and I was cranky. We were up late recording the first night's podcast from the end of night one. I barely got any sleep. As I had to go into work for the first time and then up again late. I had no sleep for like 3 straight days. And I can tell you, I was one of those fans. You know, I help run a website. I podcast. I talk about the team. I have to be objective. I'm still a fan at the end of the day, and I was livid. that they did not take a running back. I kept pounding the table for a running back at pick 26, pick 30, pick 39. I was pounding the table for a running back, and then when they passed on Dobbins, I lost my mind. Or he was picked just before their pick of the defensive tackle from Alabama. And listen, trust what the coaching staff and the front office is looking at. Okay. Would I have taken Austin Jackson at 18? No, not at all. But obviously the Dolphins understand what this kid has and what they like about him, and they're going to develop him. But as I've said on many past shows over the last few months, when we've actually had shows to do, I'm giving Brian Flores the benefit of the doubt to develop players and develop a team, because he earned that right from what he did last year with that bunch of nobodies on that roster. So now let's see what he can do with real talent, and can he develop these young kids? Because all these positions that they took, the two offensive linemen, the defensive tackles, the edge rushers in round five, obviously the quarterback at five. Let's see what you can do with these guys. And now you're bringing in your entire system. Trust the coaches, trust the front office. Cause at this point, Chris Greer, in his first full season as GM and running this show, his show, not reporting to anybody else other than Stephen Ross, he did an okay job. Now, let's see what we can do going forward. So trust, as much as I want you to believe me and everything I say is gold, it's not. It's just opinion. Trust the guys with the team.
And also, social media is toxic. Most people on social media have no idea what they're talking about. Okay. So, you know, one guy can put together a mock draft. The next thing you know, he picks up, you know, a few hundred followers. All of a sudden, he's now a draft expert. I mean, please, please, please. I mean, so be very careful what you read on social media. Just take it with a grain of salt. Next question is from Dave in Raleigh, North Carolina. I know the Dolphins are building a new indoor practice facility right now. My question is, do they really need it? And how bad is the current Miami Dolphins practice facility to where this is needed? Well, Tom, we can answer this one because we have seen the Miami Dolphins their headquarters, their practice facility, and all that stuff. We've gotten the tour, and we've been there a few times, and we've seen it inside and out. It's not that it's necessarily bad. It's just small by today's standards. Yeah. And I believe it's either the smallest in the NFL or the second smallest in the NFL. I think it was the second smallest until Tampa built theirs a couple years ago, and then it became the smallest. It's something like that. I forget the exact. But it's not necessarily bad. They got their, I think, four practice fields out there. I can't remember, Tommy. And of course, they got the inside practice bubble. Their meeting room, which is used not only for the team, but also for when they have big media announcements. State-of-the-art and beautiful, that aspect of it. But the one part that I thought was really, really small was the locker room for the team, because you have to remember the NFL players only go to the stadium, you know, 8 times a year, 10 times a year when there's a game. The rest of the year, they're at the training facility. That's their home. And the locker room for their quote unquote home, where they spend the most time, was pretty small. It was pretty small. At least by NFL standards. And I'm sure that will change with a new facility. So it's not it's not that where they are now is bad. It's not necessarily bad. It's just small. And they need a larger place. And, of course, having it be right next to Hard Rock Stadium so everything's on the same site makes it just so much easier for everyone involved in every aspect of the organization. So that's a big help. But that's the main reason why they need a new facility, just to get up to NFL standards and just sort of have a larger place.
Yeah, and someone took photos of the update of the new training facility that's going up right outside Hard Rock. So won't have to travel very far on game days. They can be at the practice facility, up until a certain time frame, and then take a shuttle or take a gondola or whatever they're going to do and take it over to the stadium. So they're there on site, so they don't have to travel any distance. Granted, the facility in Davie is only 10, 12 minutes away from Hard Rock Stadium, but it's a lot nicer to be in the proximity. And when we were there in the fall covering games, they just broke ground, and now it looks like the framework is there for the facility. Now they're just putting all the finishing touches in there. So this is going to be state-of-the-art. Stephen Ross spared no expense. He spent, like, I think it was over $200 million or something like this for this facility.
Yeah, something like that.
It's big money. So he's sparing no expense, and the Dolphins are going to have an up-to-date, state-of-the-art facility. And it's going to help the team long-term. So the facility in Davie is nice. It is small by today's standards. So next year, 2021, they're in the new facility. And I'm sure when they pan out on Sundays, if there is a game and if there is a blimp in the sky, you will see the practice facility right adjacent to Hard Rock Stadium.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the mock-ups of it, it's
gorgeous.
It'll be gorgeous. Next question. I was watching Doug's video on your website, and he was talking about Cam Wake in possibly being in the Hall of Fame. Do you believe Cam should get into the Hall of Fame? This is from Alex in Utica, New York. Alex, I feel for you because you live in Utica. So for Doug's, I saw that video. And, you know, look, once again, we're all fans of the Dolphins, but at times you got to take off your quote-unquote fan hat and be objective about this. Cam Wake's not a Hall of Fame player. He's just not. Not a Hall of Fame. When you talk about the Hall of Fame, I mean, that's the best of the best of the best of the best. And you can't put in guys like Cam Wake. When you look at the all-time leaders in sacks, Cam Wake's tied for 31st. He has 100.5, which is, you know, good. It's not bad. It's good.
Very good, actually.
But it's not Hall of Fame level. That's what it is at the end of the day. It's just not Hall of Fame level. You got to be, like, at least in the 120s, or you had to have, you know, you got to be in the 120s, I think, to be a Hall of Famer. And if you're not in the 120s, because Charles Haley's at 100.5 as well. But Charles Haley has got a fist full of rings and also made huge impact plays in huge playoff games. So there's that. And just for a Miami Dolphins reference, Trace Armstrong, who played for the Dolphins, not a Hall of Famer by any means, has 106 sacks. So if you're going to put in a Cam Wake, that means you got to start to consider guys like Trace Armstrong, which clearly is not a Hall of Fame player. But that's where, you know, that's where it is. And in the upcoming years, you're going to have someone like Dwight Freeney, who's got 125.5 sacks, clearly a Hall of Fame player. You're going to have to put in Jared Allen, who had 136 sacks. That's a Hall of Fame career. There's some older players who have, like, someone like Simeon Rice with 122. He's not in the Hall of Fame. Robert Mathis at 123. I don't think he's eligible yet, but, you know, he probably should be in too. I mean, there's a lot of guys with a lot more sacks than Cam Wake who, you know, should and would get in before Wake. Wake's a very good NFL player, don't get me wrong. Very good. Not a Hall of Famer. And that's not a knock on him. I don't hate the Dolphins. I'm not trying to be negative. That's just, you know, both things can be true. Cam Wake can be a great player, and Cam Wake is not a Hall of Fame player. Both things can be true, and that happens to be what it is in this case.
So I'm going to – my hat's half on, half off here. So I will say this. The biggest difference with Cameron Wake to many of the players that you mentioned, Cameron Wake took a whole different path to the NFL. His rookie season, he was 27. And he put up 100.5 career sacks, and 98 of that being with Miami over 10 years. So almost 10 sacks a season. That is high quality work for a guy that came in at 27. Is he Hall of Fame? No. When he gets on the ballot, he'll be there. He won't get in, at least over the course of time. You know, maybe he's got a long shot down the road, but look at the numbers that Zach Thomas have put up. Look how hard it is for Zach Thomas to get in the Hall.
Exactly.
He was so close this past season to get in.
And he'll get in next year.
And it, it's going to be tough for him next year, but he's on the cusp of getting in. Zach Thomas will be a Hall of Fame player. And, you know, he has the numbers. He has the numbers because he was equal in a lot of statistical categories to current Hall of Famers Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher. He was not better than Ray Lewis. Arguably, you'd say he's better than Brian Urlacher. But he played in an era where there's just middle linebacker. It was those three. When you think of that era of football, mid-90s through mid-2000s, those were the three football players you thought of at that position. Cameron Wake will be in the Dolphins Ring of Honor without a question. I don't even think that's up for debate. I think he will be in the Ring of Honor. They're not going to retire number 91.
Well, no.
They're not going to retire 91, but he will be in the Ring of Honor because of his career, when he started, how he got there, and how productive he was for the Dolphins. And he was the team leader for, I don't know, Mike, how many years? Since 2012, probably he was the guy.
Yeah, pretty. In the locker room. He took over probably as soon as Joey Porter left and Jason Taylor went to the Jets. That sort of became his team at that point. Even when Jason came back for that 1 year thing, it was still Wake's team at that point. So Wake pretty much was the, you know, he was the leader, which is great and everything. But, and no, look, when it comes to retired numbers in the NFL, you know, you can't retire that many because they need them. So that's number one. And number two, you know, it takes legendary status to get retired. And when you think of the Dolphins, legendary status pretty much stops at Marino, Zaka, Greasy is, yes, it is retired, but you can make a case maybe they shouldn't have, whatever. It probably stops there. Okay, I mean, there's nobody else, although I think they might do Jason Taylor. They might. I don't know if I'm in favor of it, but I think they might.
I don't think I've seen anyone wear 99 since.
Well, yeah, they won't pass it out. Usually they wait a good, you know, 6, 7, 8 years until someone like that's gone, until it's reissued. But it will be it's either going to be retired or it'll be like 10-plus years before that is reissued out. They sort of want a generation to pass before they let someone else wear it so someone doesn't have the weight of the world on their shoulders that they're wearing a Hall of Famers number type of deal, which I think is fair. But, you know, if they did retire one more, and again, if you can't retire a lot in football because they actually need them, okay? It's not like the Yankees who can retire somebody who has a nice day in April. Oh, let's retire his number because, you know, it's a smaller roster and they got 100 numbers. They, you know, they're okay. You need them in football, so you can't retire a ton. Cam Wake's not even close to that level. Jason Taylor, he's close to it, but I don't think – I wouldn't do it, but I think they might.
I think they will too.
I think they'll do it, but I don't know if I would. Let's see here. Next question. I love this question. These are the type of questions I love when we get mailbag questions. Do you prefer watching Miami Dolphins games on CBS or Fox? This is from Tom in Jupiter, Florida. Tom, I will let you answer Tom's question first. Which do you prefer, CBS or Fox?
I prefer CBS. I think a lot of that has to do with, I like Fox. I do like Fox. But every time the Dolphins have Fox, they usually have like Andrew Cannelon and James Lofton. They don't typically get like the, you know, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman as the callers or Kenny Albert for that matter. I mean, they did have Kenny Albert, but Ian Eagle, Dan Fouts, I like that combo. And for some reason, Ian Eagle always calls the biggest Dolphins moments. For some reason he does. He was the caller during the Wildcat game. He was, and then he was also the commentator for the Miracle. So for some reason, I lean towards CBS. I do like Tony Romo in the booth. I think he's great. Jim Nantz puts me to sleep because he's monotone. I think they need an upgrade there with Tony Romo. But outside of that, I do like them, but I do love Fox's pregame show better.
I don't watch much of the pregame, so what I will say this about the CBS pregame show. With Sims and Esiason, you got two guys who aren't afraid to say an opinion, which on a lot of these shows It's guys who just are afraid to say anything, even the least bit controversial. With Sims and Esiason, they'll say, you know, black and white usually. This guy's good. This guy's bad. I don't like this. I like that, which is refreshing in this day and age because most guys are so guarded on TV. They don't want to say anything that might get anybody upset, and those guys don't care. Sims and Esiason don't care. So when I do watch it, I will now go to CBS because I do like just a refreshing bit of honesty. Fox, that act has kind of gotten old, and plus I hate Michael Strahan. I think Michael Strahan's the most arrogant son of a bitch. I mean, I can't take him for more than 5 seconds, and I can't take the Fox team anymore. To me, it's an old act that needs to be refreshed. Second off, you're knocking Andrew Catalan. Two things. One, he went to Syracuse University. Don't be knocking my guy. Two, he actually works for CBS, not Fox. That's number two. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. When they're on Fox, they usually get like the worst announced crew. But part of that is the Miami Dolphins' fault because usually not a very good team. If the team was good, they would get much better announcers. I'm a CBS guy at the end of the day. I mean, honestly, I don't care because I don't watch the games. I know some people are like, oh, I hate this announcer so much, I'm turning down the volume. I've never turned down the volume over an announcer. I've never watched or not watched a game over an announcer. I think that's just ridiculous. I want to watch the games, and I think all the networks do a great job. I actually think for a game, ESPN has it down to a science. Just they don't do a million cutaways to the fans. Yes, you know, all of them do some cutaways to the fans. They have to. But ESPN actually, I think, does an amazing job with the actual game itself. And look, I'm not talking about the announcer. You know, everyone hates McFarland. I get it. He gone. Let it go. But for the actual footage of the game with the camera shot, I actually think ESPN does the best job when it comes to actual games. That's one area they have mastered and perfected. For all the faults of ESPN, the one thing they do great is actually put on a game. So I give them credit for there. But between CBS and Fox, look, they're both very good. I would lean towards CBS. I just think I like them a little bit better. But you mentioned Fouts. Fouts is gone. He got canned. Yep. He's no longer with CBS. You won't be seeing him anymore. And something else, too, I will say, you know, every Sunday, I don't care who the announcers are for the Miami Dolphins game. My Twitter feed by, like, Thursday and Friday is pissed off Dolphins fans who hate the announcer. You know, you can't hate every announcing team, okay? You just can't. There's got to be one or two that you like. You can't – they all can't suck, okay? That's number one. And number two is, you know – if the Miami Dolphins are bad, you can't expect the announcers to say nice things about them. The team's bad, they're going to say bad things about your team. When your team's good, they're going to say nice things about them. You can't pull them against the announcers. What do you want them to say? The team's like 3-7. You want them to say nice things about them? The team's 3-7. And now they're losing this game. What do you want them to say? So I don't get pissed off at announcers. I don't even hate the female announcers. I know a lot of guys, really sexist guys, oh, I don't want to listen to no girl in a bull. People put too much into that, I think, and they make too much of a deal out of it. It's really not that big a deal. Next question, and I've gotten this question, no joke, Tom, in about 20 emails, and I'm just going to read it once. So I picked this one email from Sarah in Miami, and once I read the question, you're going to know. You could probably take a guess what the question is now if I gave you 1 or 2 minutes to actually think about it, but I'm not going to give you 1 or 2 minutes. All right, will the Dolphins go back to their throwback uniforms full time, or should I give up hope? Will they go back? Okay. Short answer. Here's the answer. I don't think they will, but I think there's more hope now more than ever. You have to look at this from a financial standpoint. The fans love the throwback so much that the Miami Dolphins are going to sell the throwbacks and make a ton of money. But they're also going to sell you the new jersey too, because fans buy the new jersey. So you can have two revenue streams. And I've answered this question a million times, and I sound like a record who just – you have two revenue streams. You're going to make money off the new uniforms you sell and money off the throwback uniforms you sell. Why would you shut that down from two revenue streams to one? It makes no sense. So that's why my answer is no. With that said – I think the Miami Dolphins fan base has been so vocal about this for so long. I think they're starting to wear the team down. And I remember when Tom Garfinkel, after Shula passed, was on with the Big O, Orlando Elzagari. The Big O asked him this flat out. And, you know, there's rules. You got to wait so many years in between your last change of uniform so that they can't even make a change until like 2021, 2022. I'd have to go back and sit there and figure out the years. But, you know, he sounded almost like a broken man at this point, like he's ready to cave. So I will say the answer is no, it's probably no. But there's actually hope now where I would say 2 or 3 years ago, there was zero chance of them ever doing this. I think the fan base has worn the organization down. It's worn down Tom Garfinkel. And I think they're going to cave because, you know, the fan base who wants this, they're a vocal bunch. And they've been pushing for this for a while. So I think it might happen in the next handful of years.
I think you might be right. So I'm agreeing with you right now. Don't get your hopes up because of the revenue stream. But I think when the time comes, I think 2022 or 2023.
Something like that. I don't know. I have to sit back.
In that time frame, I don't, and I may get lambasted on Twitter for saying this, I don't think they're getting rid of the logo. But what I will say is I think they will go to that old school look to the jersey, the throwback, the originals, while maintaining the current logo. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to move away because the logo right now is more modern, right?
But yeah.
You can make the adjustments to the uniforms like you see on those throwbacks and still have the current logo. You may have to adjust a couple of the colors on the logo to make it make sense to go to the go back to that full-time throwback. But I think they're going to keep the logo.
I think if they're going to make a change, just make the change. Just go all in and do it. But we'll see. I mean, I do think there's more hope now than there's ever been. And I'll just leave it at that. Because, you know, you can find, you know, if I put up a poll, it'd probably be like 95% fans who want the old logo back. And, you know, and there'd be very few who want to stay with the new one. We've been going a while, so maybe I'll just do one or two more, then we'll stop. Let me find which one's the best here. This is a good one. From Will in Port St. Lucie. With all of the issues we are seeing with COVID spikes on the rise, do you think some teams will carry 4 quarterbacks on the roster this year? I mean, what if a team loses 2 quarterbacks in a week with a failed COVID test? They have to be prepared. That's an excellent question. And I think Will in Port St. Lucie is 100% on the ball. I think, you know, we've seen some teams most years will carry 2 on the active roster and a young guy in the practice squad. And you can get by with that because God forbid someone gets hurt. You move up the guy from the practice squad to the main roster. You find someone else for the practice squad. Most years you can get by with that. This year, like we said, it's all over the place. And I think, you know, could there be a week where 2 people on your team fail a test and you go, you know, say like 8 people on your team fail a test, 2 of which are quarterbacks because they're in, you know, the same rooms all the time, same types of meetings. Yeah, you got to be prepared. And I would think, you know, and if you're the Dolphins, you're set up perfectly here. If you hold on to Rosen, you have those 3 quarterbacks. You pick up 1, toss them on the practice squad. And, you know, you carry 4 quarterbacks. I mean, I think that is very logical. And I could see maybe not every team handling it that way. I could see a lot of teams handling it that way.
I agree. I think the Dolphins would be wise to do that also. You have a 38-year-old quarterback. You have a guy that's coming off a hip injury. You have a guy that flat out can't play. Sorry to the Rosen stands out there, but he just can't play. And Rudock. So I think the Dolphins are in that position where, you know, now with a 56-man active roster on game days with 8 offensive linemen, so 48 other players, other positions, and they're expanding most likely the practice squad to 16 guys, the possibility of the Dolphins having 4 quarterbacks at one time on this team is possible because you just don't know with this virus. You have no idea. So I think it's logical to say that as much as I think Rosen would be traded, I don't know if this is the right year to do that.
Well, they can still trade him, and
they can still trade him, but
they can still carry four. Except they got to find some more people, though.
Exactly. You still got to find another quarterback, possibly, and then Rudock becomes your number three guy. Again, there's so many question marks. The cases are going up in the South. It's brutal in Florida right now. I just don't know, you know, how things are going to pan out for sports in general. You know, the NBA was getting ready to get their camps started in Orlando, and then you got all these cases firing up all over the place. So it's going to be very interesting. I think the Dolphins would be smart to carry four quarterbacks, especially in a time this year when potentially there's a vaccine, things are a little bit more to normal. No, they're not. They're never going to carry. No team will ever carry four quarterbacks. Three, yes. Four, absolutely not. But this might be one of those weird seasons where you see four quarterbacks on the roster, with one being on the practice squad. It's a highly possible scenario.
Well, yeah, and plus two this year, you got a 55-man roster. And they also expanded the practice squad, and they're probably going to expand it again prior to the season because they have to let these teams carry more players for this situation alone. And since you have all these extra spots, you know, it would make sense to have three quarterbacks on your active roster. And then, you know, the fourth guy ain't going to be anybody who's any good, or probably be anybody that you even heard of, but just have a guy on the practice squad who, in a pinch, can, you know, be a number two quarterback for a week or two, and just in case, worst case scenario type deal. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be more roster spots available, and, you know, quarterback's the most important position on a team. If you're not prepared there, I don't care what the rest of the team is, you got no chance in hell. No chance in hell. So I think we'll stop there. I got a few more questions, but we'll save them for next week, because Lord knows next week there ain't going to be much to talk about either. So as we wrap up, first, let's get to all the plugs. First and foremost, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dolphins Talk, and follow Tom at Dolphins Talk Tom. Also, check out the Facebook page. I am a Miami Dolphins fan. That is our new official Facebook page for the site, run by the great Carlos Hernandez. So check that out. Facebook page, I am a Miami Dolphins fan. We have the link up underneath every article and every video and podcast on our site, so you can just click it easy and find it there. We have a new video up on the website. We will be doing more video work here in the near future. We have a new video up on the website that is a 2019 Preston Williams highlight video. It's really, really good. Check it out. You're going to love it. We added a few more staff members who will be putting up some more articles on the website. There's an article up right now by Chip, who's one of our new writers, so be sure to check that out there. What else am I forgetting? Oh, be sure to, if you buy anything from the website Fanatics, use the link on our website. First, go to dolphinstalk.com and click on the Fanatics link on our website. If you're doing it from your cell phone, you sort of have to scroll to the bottom of our page. It's at the bottom. If you're doing it from a, you know, old school laptop or a computer, it's just on the top right-hand side. Click on the Fanatics link and buy your stuff there, because it kicks us a few pennies to help pay for web servers and stuff like that. And if you like us and you like our podcast, help us. So you can do that. I'm trying to think. Anything else, Tom? Am I forgetting? We'll probably have another show next week, unless news breaks, of course, of any sort. Then we'll be on the air with that. Tom, it's almost my birthday. What you buying me this year?
Oh.
just kidding. I want to put you on the spot. Just kidding.
It's all right. I believe I have a number to a lady of the night in Seminole Hard Rock Casino.
That's right. Nobody's going to get that joke. And the Hard Rock, I think, is back open too. So she's probably right back at work. And off unemployment, which is always good to put Americans back to work, Tom. That's the American dream right there.
Fashion Americans, let's get. It doesn't matter the position you're in as long as you're working, right?
Hey, you know what? Just trying to make a buck. Trying to get by in life, just trying to make a buck. But I think that's it. And if I did forget something I was supposed to mention, well, there's always next week's show. So everyone have a great Wednesday. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.